welcome everyone joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. I am Roy, KC2GS, and I will be your head control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Jason, WF2N, will be your co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its homepage. Also, we offer original articles and reviews on many topics covered during these technical nets. We also publish technical puzzles for our participants to ponder and as a starting off point to discuss important technical concepts. Tonight's TechNet puzzle is posted on our home site. The link can be found on the front page of our website in orange color type. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each month. All of this information can also be found on our club website, www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. As always, an application is always available on our website. No question is too simple, no question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments to this net. Please give us your name, your call sign, and whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I'll try my best to provide an answer, and Jason WF2F will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment, and when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for any future topics of interest, please let us know either here or use our email address, tech@kc2rc.com. And now I'd like to introduce my co-host for this net tonight, Jason, WF2N. Good evening, Jason.
Hello, Roy. Good evening, and good evening to everyone on the net.
Well, this is our technical net. If you have any questions or statements or topics for discussion, feel free. Hit the push to talk button. Give us your first name and your call sign.
Kilo 2, Japan Victor X-ray.
Okay, John recognized. Anyone else want to check in tonight for a question or a statement for the technical net?
Kilo 2, Japan Victor X-ray.
Floyd, have you listed? Anyone else want to check in tonight, have a question or a topic for the technical net?
Alpha Charlie 2, Alpha Echo. Roy, I don't have a question or an answer or anything of the sorts, but I am here just listening.
Hey, Joe. Thank you for checking in. Always good to have you. You know, you never know. Someone might bring up a topic that you can talk about. So, good to have you aboard. Okay, Lloyd, let's go with you. What's your question for tonight?
So much a question as a statement for conversation purposes. Is that okay? Over.
Lloyd, it's questions or statements or topics. Whatever you want.
First of all, and I wasn't on the net Tuesday, sorry, but I should say thank you, Joe, for your condolences. Over. So, listen, the topic is this. You know, band conditions being what they are, which is pretty bad on HF, and the sunspot cycle being very, very infrequent these days, and the solar flux index being in the high 60s, which is dreadful. There seems to be other avenues available for amateurs, i.e. UHF, VHF, and millimeter band stuff. And, you know, I was thinking of talking about that, and I'm starting to get into satellites. I bought an 8-meter antenna, which is easier to use than an azimuth elevation tracking antenna. But the topic that I specifically wanted to bring up tonight was the ability to listen to NASA missions, like the Mars Curiosity rover, and so on and so forth. The Voyager 2, you know, I think with a small, with one of those old-fashioned satellite dishes on a roof, it doesn't matter where you are, New York City, Montana, the Pacific, because it's UHF, VHF, it's millimeter band stuff, it's gigahertz, that we could listen to, you know, at least acquire the signal. It might be encrypted, but it might be really cool to acquire the signals from these NASA missions. What do you think? Over.
Lloyd, yeah, it certainly would be challenging. I don't know ultimately what you could do with it if it was encrypted. My guess is they use rather sophisticated encryption technology that would be kind of difficult to get around. So you'd get this signal when you wouldn't quite be able to make anything intelligible out of it. You know, there are other signals that are available. The ISS every so often does a slow scan. There are actual satellites that are not encrypted that can be used as relays. I don't know if Malin is out there in the community. He particularly enjoys satellites. There's you know, amateur radio operators are clever people. They've kind of come up with all kinds of other options in this very poor propagation time. Joe Taylor, especially, with his different types of digital technology, people using FT8 and others, that kind of somewhat around the propagation conditions being as visible as they are. But there's more than a few options out there. You don't necessarily have to do a single sideband on 6 meters and 10 meters during these days, although, you know, we maintain a presence as a club on Sunday mornings on 10 meters. I can understand why other people would rather chase 80 and 40 meters this particular portion of the sun cycle. Moment. Yes, I'm at the west.
Hello, this is Kilo Golf 2 Charlie with a comment about the satellites. Wanted to mention, in addition to the things that you said, there are also satellites with APRS where you can exchange and make contacts, actually, and bit squares. There's at least one satellite with a store and forward mailbox system where you can store a message on the satellite via APRS, and someone else can retrieve that message. So you don't need to be in the line of sight of the satellite at the same time. You can store and forward messages around the world that way. ISS also used to have store and forward. I think that's most encouraged now. It's working. I really haven't used it. ISS has IPRS, which I'm not sure if it's working right now. Just a moment. Also, some satellites use 10 meters and 15 meters, actually, for the uplinks. And they do PSK-31. Moonbounce not really affected negatively, I think, by the cycle right now, so you can do that. And as being on the East Coast, we are in the Northeast Corridor, I think they call it, in the microwave and VHF-UHF context, where, you know, we have very good conditions with a lot of highly populated cities along the coast in a straight line. So if you have any sort of Yagi, you know, you can make a lot of contacts that way. Raise it high enough. Back to that from Kilo Golf 2 Charlie.
Thank you very much, Belen. That's very good information. And certainly one thing that you don't need the ionosphere for is moonbound, if that's your particular thing to do. In the old days, it required a great deal of hardware. You needed, ridiculous 8x8 arrays of Yagis pointed up at the moon. You needed a kilowatt of power. But again, thanks to people like Joe Taylor, people have been able to not terribly industrial versions of ham radio gear to do moonbound. So, you know, there are still hills to climb, you know, even in this poor propagation time, Lloyd. By the way, I too would like to put forth my views as well. But getting back to satellites and such, any more comments on this particular thing? Thank you.
go to the JPL, that is the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which is the arm of NASA through the University of California that conducts most of the unmanned space missions, you would see that they have somewhere in the order of 46 active missions going. So I'm thinking, in the same vein that we think it's great to get a call sign from some unique island or a mountaintop or a special event station or just someone that we're interested in talking to and we log it when the HF bands are good, that's great. But so conversely, though, it could be a challenge to try to acquire the signal, at least acquire the signal from all those missions. And you know, you would know that you had acquired those signals because your Keplerian dynamics would point the antenna in the direction where you were trying to acquire the signal at that moment, where that space probe was, where that satellite was, etc., and or where Mars was, and there are those satellites now orbiting Mars that relay the communications from the surface of Mars, which is really cool. So even if you got unintelligible tones in the millimeter wave frequencies, it still would be kind of neat because you would have acknowledged that you at least were able to acquire those signals. Over.
Well, yes, Floyd, you're right. Matter of fact, I recall something like last year, there was a lost satellite someplace, and I don't know if it was an amateur radio operator, but a guy very interested in satellites was able to retrieve a signal and located it in the exact location where the lost satellite was thought to vaguely be. He kind of pinpointed it that way. So, it's possible to do. It's not quite as rewarding as most people like to transmit and receive signals back and forth through satellites. It would be more like satellite listening, like shortwave listening, than it would be to communicate. But that's certainly an interesting try. My guess would be, although there are satellites that are well mapped, and there's probably an app for it, there probably are a lot of unmapped satellite transmissions of a military sort that you wouldn't be able to figure out, what satellite that might be. But sounds like an interesting thing. So you're planning to look into that type of work?
Roy, thank you, and also thank you for your results.
He was able to borrow a rather expensive from went for, and he listened into the NASA control station communications with the astronauts, recorded a bunch of it, and really upset the NASA personnel a great deal, because they really disliked the idea that the public access to a live feed. They would have preferred to keep it in-house. There are a lot of satellites that are designed for something as simple as a two-meter array, parabolic. The NASA stuff probably requires a little bit more in the way of a much bigger dish. I haven't seen those, by the way, those kind of dissolve over decades. They would be in people's lawns. You could see them from the grand old days of them stealing satellite signals from cable companies, because that's how they had distributed it. And those things just kind of fell apart. I haven't seen a single one of them in probably easily 10 years. I don't know if anyone else is aware of anyone who still has a 2-meter satellite array.
I'm from Kilo Alpha 2 Charlie. Actually, I was here. I had just dabbled with you, so that's why you didn't hear me. I wanted to comment on the question about the satellites. Basically, I do work satellites from time to time. Working the FM satellites is frustrating, to say the least, especially if you're doing on weekends or weekday evening, early in the weekend, or even sometimes around noon, when people have their lunch breaks or some free time around dinner, or weekends when they have a lot of free time. So those times, it can be difficult. Especially if there's something like a special event or a rolling expedition. But fixed times that are not as active, and for example, if you try to listen the low angle passes coming from the East Pacific Ocean, it will be easier for you, especially if you operate full duplex, which is very highly recommended on all satellites. Initially, you might try half duplex, what we're doing here with us talking on the repeater. I don't hear the repeater while I talk, but on satellites, it's customary to operate full duplex, since it's another band, either with one full duplex radio or with two separate radios. You can operate full duplex, and then you'd know if you're making the satellite, because you'd hear yourself if you're making it. If you're not, you can adjust your antenna, or you can know who's talking. You can find yourself. But working the linear satellites, I found easier, actually. Because they're not as crowded. They have a passband, so FM satellites, the communication makes it through. And you're not supposed to use a lot of power. On single sideband satellites, you have up to 100 kilohertz, I think, the widest bandwidth we have on satellites to talk. And, there's plenty of space. Some people do CW, some people do CK, there's single sideband, and different bandwidth and talk. And the nice thing is some of them have longer passes. For example, of your FM satellites, their passes are 10-15 minutes max. Whereas SL-29, for example, the pass is, I think, about 20 minutes, a little over 20 minutes. So the time it takes to set up the gear for me is the same, but I get to work for longer, and other tuning is easier. Let me drop for a moment, and I'll regarding the deep space stuff, there is specialized software for tracking the deep space satellites. It's different than the model we use for low Earth orbit and other orbiting around the Earth. But there is software that you can use. It gets a bit expensive to do it in practice. That big dish, you will want it to have, first of all, you will need a bigger dish for satellite or much farther. We want a very tight beam. On that very tight beam, you'll probably have a bigger antenna. That big antenna you will need to control very, very accurately so hit that satellite with the so that adds to the expense. And yeah, of course, you will need the three amplifiers in our... And we also know, you know... So there are challenges, not really my cup of tea, so I don't know much about it, just... I know there's people who listen for that sort of thing. Regarding the satellite that was discovered, I think it was last year, and it was an Exxon, but basically they were looking to identify a specific satellite out of a cluster of satellites that were the two satellites were using on clusters. They have separate object IDs, and they try to figure out which one is which based on their Doppler shift. And one guy noticed some Doppler shift on his SDR band adapter that didn't match any of them, and didn't match any active in the database, and he realized, well, it would be one of the old satellites if it was active, and that's how he realized it's active. I think that was the gist of that story. Back to net control from Kilo Golf 2 Charlie.
Okay, thank you very much, Malin. I'm a little curious, your mic gain seems to fluctuate approximately 3-4 seconds. I was looking at your input signal, which is kind of looks fine. It's just the audio kind of dips down and then comes back, and then dips down and then comes back. I wonder why.
Oh, thanks, Roy. Well, that tends to happen when I don't use an HD or something like that, but a handheld microphone, H31 I'm using right now. I'm using a new radio tonight, and I'm moving around, not staying in one place, and I guess as the distance between me and the microphone changes, so does the audio that you hear. I'm using an Yaesu FT817, that will be 5-watt radio HF. I'm liking it. It arrived today. I'm glad that it sounds okay most of the time, except when I move. Thanks. Back to Ned from Kilo Golf 2 Charlie.
It's fine. I am a lazy person, so I usually operate a headset if I can. So I could move my head any place I want, and my microphone has no choice but to follow me. Hey, Lloyd, did we answer part of your question at least? Is there any other aspects of that you're curious about? Or if anyone else has any input on the subject, feel free.
You guys, any of you out there, anyone out there on the net tonight, considered going to satellite and perhaps building a stationary station, as opposed to what I think Milan does, which I've seen him do, which is with a Arrow Yagi, and you have to point it at the satellite, very challenging, and then change the Doppler shift by changing the channels on your HD at the same time. It's a whole set of skills that are different than anything else we do in the ham world. But I'm finding that if you set up a base station, it's a lot easier because you don't have to spend your time dealing with the antenna. And you can spend your time dealing with the tuning and finding that right moment where you can get your call sign in and hopefully get someone to respond back to you. So what's neat about it is that in the metropolitan area, or anywhere for that matter, obviously, it has nothing to do with noise. So or very little to do with noise. So it's sort of something to do, I'm thinking now, outside of the band conditions, back to my first comment. And I have a question, Milan. Are you operating remotely, or are you in the city? Over.
Good. I'm in the city. I'm in Queens until the end of the month. And regarding the satellite stuff, there are some advantages actually to operating portable instead of at home. Because at home, usually people have a router on the rooftop and coax, so there's some loss from the long coax run. And then the rotor is pretty expensive, and you usually need azimuth and elevation rotor, but that doesn't adjust for polarization, because usually for the FM satellites and most of the linear transponders, the antennas on them are like a dipole, basically, or a whip. So, you know, you have linear polarization, but those satellites are spinning, so you need to rotate your dipole or Yagi, basically, to match polarization, or you can have quite a bit of loss. And when you're operating portable, if you have a handheld Yagi like the Arrow or the Elk, which is a long periodic, you know, then you can adjust your polarization, and you know, you have quite the advantage with both the transmit and the receive. And you have very short coax runs as well, which is cheaper, and you have less losses. Well, there's a definite advantage to operating portable. I've done that. I've also done some stationary stuff. ISS is very easy to receive on SSTV, even with, you know, your vertical antenna or even an HD at home. You can receive the SSTV images with some noise, but with a Yagi, you can definitely do it perfectly. Or from a mobile station in your car with a whip antenna on top, you know, you can also do that. You can even work some satellites on some of the passes, at least, that way. So, yeah, and this is not really dependent on the ionosphere all that much, so, you know, it can be done when HF conditions are bad. Back to you, Lloyd, from Kilo Golf to Charlie.
Yeah, all of the above. Hi. I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. It's a whole other world, excuse me, that I'm just finding out about. There's food in my mouth, sorry.
Financially than you know, running around and pointing antennas with one hand and pulling dials on handy bookies with the other. I mean, if you feel the need to engineer something like that, as Malin mentioned, you have to be able to have a gimbal on a bunch of axes to make sure that the antenna is lined up. And there is software. There is, I think, one of the major things, and I've talked to Malin about it, the ICOM 9700 seems to be incredibly suited and pointed at people doing things like this to one degree or another. And there's a lot of software that will possibly help you with the Doppler shifting and such, and keep the rotators in line. So if you got the wampum and the engineering desire to rig something like that, it's probably a lot more work up front and less work for using the satellite system than the manual method.
Yes, I agree with you, Roy. That's definitely the state. Like, once you get it all going, and the 9700 is very appealing, and you can operate it remotely, too. So, it's all kind of neat. You know, I just wanted to throw this out there because, you know, you go on HF on a Saturday now, there's like six people on, and the same stations every night, and from overseas. So, it's just another world, and something to talk about. Back to Ned.
I agree with you completely, Roy. There's a lot more to amateur radio than HF, although it was my first love in this hobby. There's UHF, there's VHF, there's distance, low signal, SSD, there's microwave. There's all kinds of different things that you can look into. It doesn't only have to be HF, and really, you know, as we've mentioned before, it's primarily 20 meters up to 6 meters that's really bad these days. 80 and 40 don't really change that much. If anything, sunspots tend to be disruptive to the lower band. There's a lot of things hams can do. It just depends upon their interest and their inclination. Again, I missed that.
Alan, from Kilo Golf to Charlie. Well, on the topic of satellites, actually, and, you know, easy working once you set things up, I think the theme of that that we have right now, at least, is the geostationary satellite that was all of Europe, all of Africa, and parts of Brazil and Asia. Kilo, Quebec Oscar 100, SKO2. The stationary satellite, you set up your dish or two dishes, depending on how you want to set it up. Point them at the satellite, and they never move. So you just fix them in place. You have to figure out how to receive the 10 gigahertz signal, which is fairly easy. Take the satellite LMB, although it's nice if it's frequency stable, so all the temperature control, the oven oscillator, stabilize it a bit, and then you transmit on 2.4 gigahertz, for which there's commercially available transverters from Germany or from LSU Labs, which is in Bulgaria, so, you know, get those things, set up your clock, set up your transverters. You need some sort of receiver and, you know, transmitter for either 2 meters or 70 centimeters, and, you know, and then the way the LMB, it down converts, I think, to 700 something megahertz, and some people put another down converter, either put it on 2 meters or 70 centimeters, or they just use an SDR like the RSP1 Alpha to listen to that. It's kind of complicated to set it up, and because some of the parts are difficult to get, or you have to make yourself, especially the antenna parts. But once you do it, you know, there's no moving elements to it, and it works 24/7 regardless of propagation. So it's like having a band that's always open to a fixed part of the world, and you can talk with everyone who has a station for that. That's pretty cool. Back to Net from Kilo Golf 2 Charlie.
C2GS. So that's very good to hear, Melin. By the way, are you aware, is anyone kind of linking that satellite signal to a internet audio stream so that people can kind of listen in on what kind of traffic is going on there?
Of course, there's several official SDRs, web SDRs, where you can see the entire passband. Part of the passband is for narrowband transmissions like voice and digital signals, W, and things like that. And another part is for digital amateur television. You can use the SDRs to monitor this stuff. It's free, and you know, some amateurs also have set up their own, but there are, I think, two official ones that you can use. You are supposed to operate full duplex. It's a requirement for that satellite, but I know a number of people who are not really following that requirement, and well, they have a transmitting station, and for receive, they actually use the web SDR despite its small latency. That works well enough for them, so it will work well enough for you to listen to them. I think there's more and more people on it, you know, as people gradually acquire the equipment and get the expertise. There's a very active forums by the German Amateur Radio Organization, ARL, where they discuss equipment, software, and all kinds of stuff there as well, if you want to learn more about it. And there's at least one Facebook group. Back to Net from Kilo Golf 2 Charlie.
Okay, very good, Milan. So Lloyd, you got a whole bunch of good ideas, and you could mull them around, you know, figure out what's best for you, and please tell us what you've done and what you've accomplished so we can learn as well.
Thank you, Roy. You know, just to say, I'm following up on Milan's last comments. I'm just looking for it now, but I can't, and I didn't bookmark it properly. But the famous radio telescope in Britain maintains an SDR site for the Oscar satellite, the geostationary satellite, and you can tune into it, and it's your typical web SDR station, and the bandwidth for the single sideband phone transmissions is very wide, and it's easy to tune into, and it's really neat, and you can hear hams in England talking to hams in India, and in a single sideband, so they still have to tune each other in over a geostationary satellite, which is at the end of the, you know, which is very simple, you know, once you have your antenna pointed correctly. And it's kind of neat, and it's just, you know, in this day and age, it's very sad that we don't have our own geostationary. In fact, it's embarrassing that they have their own geostationary satellite that was put up by a Middle Eastern country, and we don't have one in the United States Because if we did have one, like, let's say, over Mexico or closer to the equator, it would cover a vast area of the Western Hemisphere, which would be just, like, totally cool. Anyway, so that's just something to say, and we could leave this topic now. Back to you, Roy. Over.
Comment?
Excellent. Comment away.
Troy, just to follow up on what Lloyd said, well, there is a project for such a satellite, and I know a lot of work has been done on such a satellite over the U.S. In fact, I think a couple of years ago, the expectation was that I think U.S. would have it first, and then, you know, Qatar just volunteered it. Was it Qatar? I think it was Qatar that, you know, volunteered to do it. Well, that's how Europe and Africa got there first. If people donate enough money to AMSAT, that will definitely happen. I mean, in addition to launching the FM Cube satellites, they are planning to go to geostationary orbit or geosynchronous orbit. If you want to launch some, you know, higher altitude or high orbit satellites, very fun. There used to be satellites like that with higher orbits, but now most of the stuff we have here is pretty low orbit. So, you know, if AMSAT just had enough funds, they would do it. They have the expertise, you know, they have smart people, they have engineers, they have a lot of connections, but, you know, this stuff requires money. And it's in the tens of hundreds of thousands and sometimes millions, depending on what orbit is. So, wanted to throw that out there if anyone wants to take a look at that organization. Without them, it's probably not going to happen, basically. Back to that from Kilo Golf to Charlie.
Thanks, Milan. That's more useful information. AMSAT is a respected organization, has been doing this for years and years and years. And so if people out there are interested in satellites and working satellites, they should think of donating a couple of shekels their way.
K2JVX net comment?
Yes, Lloyd.
So here it is for anyone else listening. This is a really easy word to remember. The Earth station in the United Kingdom that is has an SDR for the geostationary satellite is called Goon Hilly. G-O-O-N-H-I-L-L-Y. G-O-O-N-H-I-L-L-Y, Goon Hilly Earth Station. And if you just Google that, because it's obviously a weird word, it'll come right up, and you can go right to their website, Goon Hilly. And they have an excellent site on this stuff, and they have the active SDR program, so you can listen into that thing anytime, day or night. Back to that.
Okay, very good, Lloyd. And Goon Hilly is a great English descriptive location, so that sounds cute. Thanks a lot, Lloyd. Any other comments on this subject out there, please feel free, hit the push talk button, say your piece.
Jill, in the comment?
Yes, Jason.
Not necessarily on the topic of satellites, but on the topic of things to do in the bottom of the solar cycle. You know, it's the season for sporadic E, so you can try your hand at 6-meter VX. There are quite a number of people that I met at the Visalia VX convention that were chasing DXCC for 6 meters, and they were quite successful. And it doesn't take a lot to put a 6-meter Yagi on the roof, so if you have the capability to or the access to do such a thing. Unlike HF Yagis. And another thing is UHF-VHF communications via single sideband or just even FM. Or perhaps AM, I don't know. So lately, there's websites out there that will forecast the tropospheric conditions. And, you know, the past few days it's actually been conditions where it's been fair to strong stratospheric ducting. I've heard reports from hams that they were able to communicate with folks with repeaters out in Long Island with full quieting all the way from Brooklyn. So it's definitely out there, and I think right now the conditions were set to be strong. And I think there might be a path into Maryland looking at the map. So hey, you can try your hand at that. There's other options aside from HF. So this is WF2M. Back over to that.
Very much, Jason. And to my knowledge, the only consistent AM that goes on say, 2 meters, is actually something called a dinosaur net that operates 7 o'clock. It used to be Wednesdays. I think they've moved it either to Tuesday or Thursday at 7 o'clock at 145.00, and it's amplitude modulated. It's run by a gentleman who really loves his 1950 gear, and so he operates on 2 meters in AM. The only one that I know of that operates 2 meters, at least locally here in AM. But yeah, there's single sideband, there's AM, there's FM. You know, it boggles the imagination of what you can possibly do. It really depends upon what interests you. Some people love FT8 and can do it all the time, and other people just want to put their foot up on the soapbox and talk and jaw down in 80 meters or 160 meters. Different strokes for different folks, as the old saying goes.
E2A with a comment.
Your questions or statements or what have you for this particular topic?
E2A with a comment.
Would you like to comment?
Hi, Roy and Jason and Lloyd and everybody. This is KE2A. This is Chris. A couple things come to mind. One is on the solar cycle itself. I did notice that we're starting to see sunspots for cycle 25. They're polarized as such, and also their location on the sun show that we're just seeing the very, I think maybe the first official one happened just yesterday or the day before. And then as far as activities, I think I'm the one who gave Jason the report. last night I was hitting the Hopog Great South Bay repeater with full quieting, and their internet linked into something called the East Coast Reflector. So I found myself on the East Coast Reflector TechNet last night quite easily with an HT on my balcony. So summer is a lot of fun for weird propagation on VHF and UHF. And so just wanted to make those two comments, and back to Net from KE2A.
Very good, Chris. Thank you for adding that. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, there's ways of telling a difference between the old sunspot cycles and eruptions from the new. And the trouble is they're going to be very few and very far between for the next few years. We haven't really hit the minimum for another year, and then it's a long haul back up to a maximum. There is, we have seen amazing propagation conditions some Sunday mornings on 10 meters, where we started to talk to all manner of people across the East Coast from Massachusetts on down to Florida. So if you're stubborn about it and you keep your finger up there and check for the change in the wind, you can find times that propagation is not as abysmal as it usually is. It just takes a little bit more stubbornness on our part to do it right now. Eventually, when the sunspots are more frequent, you'll be able to just turn this radio on, and it will be there for you. But now you got to kind of hunt for it. But some people enjoy the hunt. With any comments or questions or statements about this particular subject. Okay, is there anyone who kind of came in late who has any questions or topics that they're interested in going through?
Now's the time. Just hit the push-to-talk button. Give me your first name and your call sign. Okay, let's try the TechNet puzzle for today, July 10th, 2019. It brings up a somewhat new term. Some people know about, some people don't. I thought it would probably be nice to just kind of roll it around and for those people unaware of it, to add it in their lexicon. The question is, in calculating a SINAD, S-I-N-A-D, most of the noise comes from, as the choice is A, the ionosphere, B, outer space, C, nearby electrical interference, and D, within the receiver. So, does anyone want to play tonight?
JVX.
Yes, Lloyd.
Say, since the purpose of it is to sort of figure out what the noise is, the muff and all that, I'd say that the worst interference is from within the receiver itself. Over.
You are absolutely positively right. Thank you, Lloyd. SINAD is a receiver audio quality measurement that is typically used for mobile stations operating on an analog system. It amounts to the ratio of signal, noise, and distortion divided by the noise and distortion levels expressed in decibels. So it usually is takes into account the receiver's inherent internal noise. So the noise mostly is coming, in the case of that type of a measurement, within the receiver. So it's something nice to know. You're not going to use it on your HF gear. It's mostly on your VHF, UHF mobile gear. But that's what SINAD is. So for a few people who haven't heard of it, you can look it up. It's an interesting term.
JVX comment.
Floyd.
So I was kind of quick to that because I'm taking, and this is for everyone's general information, that company, the Great Courses, they have a sale on a course now. It's like $50, and I'm telling you, it's totally worth it, on radio astronomy, which also covers many aspects of what we do and how it functions, and ties it into radio astronomy in general. And it's like 24 classes, comes with a book and everything that you can download as a PDF, and it's a great course, half an hour segment, so you could, you know, just do it every now and then or at the gym or whatever, and it's an excellent, excellent course. And of course, in radio astronomy, in order to suppress the inherent noise within a system, this is crazy, they bring all their RF equipment to near absolute zero so that there is a cessation of all molecular activity other than the acquired signal back to them.
Great information. Yeah, as you, a lot of electronic noise is thermal noise, and so if you bring the thermal noise lower by lowering the average kinetic energy, the temperature, you decrease the thermal noise factor. So that's intriguing. I'm aware of Great Courses. I've listened and watched a bunch of them, and they're endlessly amusing. I'm going to have to hunt down the radio astronomy. I don't think I saw that. They sent me the catalog. I guess I haven't been rifling through them as much as I should.
The instructor is the director, the executive director of Green Bank Observatory in West Virginia. So it's just really, he's a really good guy, and he really knows his stuff. The focal point is on hydrogen, 1410 megahertz. That's the majority of the show, but they cover all the other bases, too. Back to you.
Okay, very good. It sounds like it should be very interesting. I indeed have to look that up and check that out. This is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra. Roy here with Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We've done the questions. We've attempted some answers. We've done the puzzle. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics or what have you, before we roll this up for tonight, now's the time. Just hit the push to talk button. Give me your name and your call sign. David, how are you this fine night? Do you have any questions or statements or topics or what have you?
It's a fine night. I'm sitting in Palmer's Emo Pond, and the fountain sound is very soothing. And I thought about two things. One is what I can do with the existing equipment that I have, so I don't have to buy any more equipment. So what can I do with what I already have that I didn't know about or that I haven't done before? And the other thing is, I don't have so much to say. I spend more time listening on the radio, you know? And I find that I only want to talk to people so much I can get a good conversation, you know? Back to you, sir.
Well, I'm not quite, I don't have the list of the devices that you have. I tend to kind of know of, you know, what you tend to like or say that you like on the radio. You are more into a conversational mode than a technological, so I would assume that if I suggested things like slow scan television or FT8 or one of those low signal modes, that wouldn't really resonate with you because you're for the most part interested in the conversation. So it's mostly, and I don't know if you do much in the way of CW, so I assume most of this is phone. Some of it is single sideband, I guess, on HF, and the other is FM on repeaters. So there are so many different things that one can do in amateur radio. It's kind of difficult, you know. It's like saying, you know, who should you marry? You know, there's a lot of options out there. Off the top of my head, I don't know. Other than as we mentioned before, you might want to try single sideband on 2 meters or UHF. You might surprise yourself by finding someone else on there. Otherwise, anyone else have any good suggestions for David?
Roy, you know, I think with what I have, I can accomplish the goal, you know. 1 meter, there's plenty of activity throughout the day. Listen and listen on 20 meters, you know. People, they come up, they go down, you know. I tried FT8 was just okay. I didn't like it so much. Even like on 17 meters, you know, because I have two or three signals on 17 meters, you know. But I think, how to say, make conversation with either any of those. One, they go for, I can just call FT and see who answers. Many times I wait for other, I listen for other people to call to you, and then I answer them, you know? Like on Tuesday, you know, I look for people. There wasn't so many, the propagation wasn't good, and I was working with very weak signals, you know? But I used to make a bunch of them anyway. That was all good, you know? It was all good, actually.
Hey David, that's good to hear. Have you looked into digital modes that offer internet connections and therefore networks that can kind of cross around the world? It might give you an opportunity to a larger group of hams out there and some people who are good conversationalists.
I'm holding an Anytone 8783 HD, and it's a GMR HD, and it has a function where, you know, you set the talk group that you want, and then you roam across 50 different repeaters in the area, and pick the one that gives the best signal. You know, it's pretty good, but I find that, you know, digital is probably the same in any mode. And, you know, I've reached a certain point in DMR where I don't want to buy anything else, and, you know, I don't want to progress. I only want to just have a conversation. So, maybe the other problem is, you know,
Yes, I mean there is a problem in that analog signals kind of deteriorate slowly and progressively. Digital is good until it reaches a critical point, and then all kinds of errors get injected into it, and it becomes completely unreadable. So there's a plus and there's a minus to digital technologies. Other avenues of networking of analog repeaters, there's RLC, trying to connect with other repeaters, I'm sure you use, but it's kind of a private IRLP where they have host reflectors and other such things. So as far as networks, you can either go with digital, with the technology you already own, or you can try the analog varieties and some repeaters that give access to that.
Yes. I've tried old stars. I set it up on my Windows 7 computer, and I was using it with an old browser and JavaScript, and learned somehow to break it. Some of the questions, they just couldn't understand how I could get this thing to work. It was just kind of weird, how many times I tried to make this thing work. But the quality, it wasn't so good, The signal quality, but there was maybe, I don't know how many hundreds of channels to access on the old star. But I think that I like 20 meters, I like 17 meters, and, there's plenty of activity there that really listens, you can find it. And there's something else I wanted to say that I forgot what it was.
I haven't been to 17 meters in a while. Whenever I went there in the past, there were usually one or two nice strong signals, and that was about it. Like I said, 20, when 20 is good, 20 is decent these days. Not never great, but decent. 40, you kind of struggle through no matter what you throw at it. And 80, you pretty much have to wait way, into sunset and such. There's a lot of good connections and bad connections with all these networking. I have found Echolink especially. There are operators that set their audio much too hot, but there are other people who set them right. So, you never know what you get until you jump in and you try.
Hey, Roy, you ever tried a thing called Nina? Nina.
Again, it sounded like you said Nina.
Nina. Papa, Echo, Nancy, I'm sorry. Papa Echo Alpha Nancy United Tango. Nina.
I'm sorry, so say one more time.
Nina. Papa Echo Alpha November United Tango. Nina.
You're talking about the application that lets you kind of get into communication, the PINA. I've heard people mention it. I've never kind of used it. I think the last time I looked, I found out it was basically an Android application. I remember when it was in beta testing, and the guy who did it kind of wasn't sure if he was going to continue or whether he was just going to use it as an experiment. But that runs on Android, right? It doesn't really run on iOS, or at least it didn't the last time I checked.
I didn't check for iOS because I don't have iOS.
I have an old Android phone and it works great. Ever since I got rid of the app notifications and I blocked all of them, you know, the phone works great. You know, I get rid of all the commercials and the phone is not clogged up with commercials anymore. You know, I think there's new phones, you know, they need higher clock speed and more memory to accommodate all the commercials that are, you know, going through from the notification. And, with CNET, I had so many great conversations on CNET and also on Echolink. I find that Echolink works better than DMR. And I think CNET works better than Echolink and DMR. Just because CNET has such a better audio quality, you know? And, how many great conversations I had on my 8G, sometimes in a private call and sometimes many times in a group call.
Okay, that's good to know. I'll check again. Again, my sense when I was doing this about 6 months ago was that the developer was just developing for the Android, and since I don't own an Android phone, I tend to have gotten an iPhone years ago, and I just like the operating system. I don't consider myself particularly an Apple fanboy. My regular computers are all Windows-based, they're not OS X, but my iPads and my cell phone are from Apple. I've had good times with them. I haven't really noticed any particular ad problem popping up. It depends what apps you accept and what you delete. But I will certainly double check whether Peanuts has become available for the iOS system.
Yes, well, I think most Apple products are very innovative. Specifically, their computers. The new Mac Pro that's coming out in a few months, totally expandable, totally upgradable, and I guess the idea is they try to do something new, but also keep some of the things that they've done before, older things. I believe the idea that they have is, you know, to go to the computer unit space, the same operating system. And years ago,
the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge always persists.
try to listen a bit more or talk a bit less. It's time to roll this all up and shut down now, but we'll be back to do it all over again July 24th. You're all welcome to join us. So thanks to all the people that participated tonight, especially to Jason, WF2N. Without you guys, I'd just be talking to myself. So this is Roy, AC2CS, going clear, and getting the heck out of here. Have a great week, guys, and we'll talk again soon.